The following presentation is brought to you by The Realm Network.
Episode 69. I say this every time. I can't believe it. 70 episodes and you all are still here with me. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Sometimes I wake up and think I have the best life, best job ever, especially when I get to interview guests. Not one, but two. You know them from so many different things, but the Rainbow Express here with flying colors. I haven't talked to Lenny Lane in years. Alan Funk was on a few episodes back. This is going to be amazing. Put your hands together. Brand Family, Realm Network. Ah, I got somebody here. I can't do it. Oh! What are you doing?
What's up?
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you just fine. Can you hear me?
I can. I wish I could see your face better, though. You're so damn cute. Can you face the light? Shit, that's what I got. I'll take it. I can't believe how great you look. Here comes Paul. Look at you guys.
I'm on Goldie's podcast and I really don't care.
What are you doing, Lenny? It's been so, look, my head's so big compared to the rest of you, but I'm not wearing pants, so I can't go too far back. It's too hot.
I don't have pants on either, Goldie.
I have pants on.
I said that on John Arizzi's podcast because I was up in my attic gimmick. And if you have the wall unit on, it's really loud. So I was like, oh, shit, I better turn this off. Well, when I checked the temperature after his, it was like 101 degrees. Like, I was literally just like dripping sweat. And I just said something about like, it's so hot up here. I'm not wearing any pants. And like, all these marks just like came out of the woodwork. They just went for the jugular. I'm like, what's that?
Start sending you some DMs, some dick pics.
The dick pics are, that's a given. The dick pics are good. No, they were just like, you know, you shouldn't sit there and get mad when marks say sleazy remarks, when you make comments like you're not wearing pants. I'm like, oh my God, if that's how sensitive you are, then you really need to like, and you guys, the sensitivity level. I thought Lenny just showed me that he wasn't wearing, or you weren't wearing pants.
I'm just starting to. I've seen Lenny pantless many times.
You guys are still both jacked as shit.
That's because we're working. We're ready.
L-squared.
Are we allowed to talk about what you're doing right now, Lenny?
I'm in my home gym of my soon-to-be ex-wife, so I'll be living in my camper.
Oh.
While her doctor boyfriend moves in. But as I will explain on this podcast, I've got big plans.
Well, I like, let's segue before we even get into that. Goldie's Closet's on Vince's network. Vince was always really cool to me, whether you got heat or not, or people have heat. Like, years have gone by since the absolute stupidity of me with the early years of TNA. So I've basically, you know, turned this podcast into.
Excuse you.
There's a lot of entrepreneurs that I have on and like all my rock star friends, but it's my absolute joy to have on anybody that I worked with back in the day that I had no freaking clue like who you were and what you did. And it's just, it's embarrassing, but I'm a bigger person to say like, I'm watching like these matches with like you and Rey Mysterio. And like, I'm just like, okay. I just thought you were like some guy running around in your trunks, both of you. I didn't know. I didn't know all the great stuff that you did. I didn't know ECW. And then what was the other one that I was reading about with you, Lenny? OM. Which one was it? I saw like some matches. It was OMM something or OWM. Oh,
like an independent?
Yeah. Which one was that?
I never pay attention to where I'm doing it.
Really, you independence go to, you never know who you
are. It's hard to ever keep track and keep them straight. You know what I mean? It's just these a lot of times, let's just face it, marks get a little money from their parents and their friend has a bar, so they put on a show and they'll bring in some legit talent, but then on most of occasions they put their friends on in the main event that looks like 18-year-old kids. And
or the booker books himself in the main event.
Right, and gives them the belt.
Can we shoot on that? Because, like, that's something that I don't really have. There's not, like, a lot of people in my life in Nashville, Tennessee that I can explain what it's like. Because, you know, I did get asked, as I itch my nose, excuse me, I got asked on the indie circuit a lot to come do appearances. Or they're like, well, just get in the ring. And, like, unbeknownst to a lot of people, Kurt Hennig was helping me, taking me under his wing. Anytime that we could go over some moves or he could teach me about some psychology, he was. And then, of course, you know, he went to go be with the Lord. So that didn't work out very well for me. But, like, I'm like, oh, well, I know a little bit. And I would go on these jobs and, like, I can't even tell you, like, New York, Connecticut. I'm trying to think of where else. There was one, Memphis. And I'd go on these jobs and, like, nobody knew what was going on. And worse than it was when I was at TNA. And I would get there and they'd want me to do all this stupid stuff, or it's like I was there to be their girlfriend or something and get paid to be like a wrestling side hoe, or I can't even explain like what it was, but it was absolute debauchery and just insanity. And then of course, when all was said and done and like you did do some spots, did get hurt, did some really horrible backstage interviews with like no lighting, no microphone, it was like fake shit. Like, then they didn't want to pay you on top of that. Right. And then there's no hotel. Like, you had your plane ticket back and forth, but then you were just SOL. Like, I think I ended up on some lesbian's couch. God bless her soul. she let me. What's, like, the worst story between the both of you? Because I've got a friend that's got a new job, and his boss is a millennial, and he just keeps getting in heated discussions because he's working with me now. He's like, oh, wrestling's just all fake. And it's just, I'm like, there's like so nothing fake about maybe the new people, the new jobbers that are out right now, but like just all of the work that goes into. I was talking to Scott Hudson about like all of the first wrestling shows that he did for like $5. That's what he got paid, like $5. What's the worst, absolute worst experience at an indie between both of you that you've had? That's something that I actually love to hear.
There's several I have, but let me just share the one between Lenny and I, which it's not even an independent show. Working for TNA, they would not fly him to Nashville. He flew to Atlanta.
From where? From Minneapolis?
For
the reason, I don't know why.
And they plane tickets were too expensive, they said.
And they wouldn't pay for hotels or nothing, so he'd stay at my house in Atlanta. I'd pick him up. We'd drive 3.5 hours to Tennessee, Nashville, do the shows, and then we'd drive back. And one night he got stuck in Jorge's job, his dog-ridden piss all over the house.
He was this cat was nice kid, man. Good boy.
He was flying elves. I know.
Living with some rat who I guess Riggs had lived with for a while. And their dog was so old, it laid on this blanket and just shit and pissed everywhere. It couldn't get out. It couldn't do it. So come time, I was like, you know, we're telling stories. We're talking. He's showing me matches. I'm loving it because I love this business, right? And I like to help the younger kids out. So
I'm still back. I'm still back at the rat. The permanent residence of the rat, and then some other dog pissing and shit, bro. Okay, so you're loving the. Don't make me cry too much. I just got a lot of Botox and filler, and I can't. I'm perfect now, so don't crack it. Go ahead. Yeah. Fast forward: rat, dog shitting and pissing, and you're enjoying watching video. What one of you guys didn't watch videos? That's all I ever did with any guy that I ever dated in wrestling was watch videos.
It's time to go to bed, right? So I said, hey, dude, I got to get to bed. So he goes, oh, I'll have you sleep in this room here. So we walk in the room, and it's a, you know, a double bed. And he goes, hey, do you think there's room in here for both of us?
Who said this? Wait,
Jorge. Jorge. And I said, sure, dude, there's no problem, you know, because I don't mind that stuff. You know what I mean?
Put your pants off.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. So, and then he drove me to the airport the next day. And yeah.
That's so, no funny story. Business, though. I thought it was going to be a funny business story.
No, no funny business. You know, it's just like, hey, do you think I can sleep in here too? Because he probably didn't want to sleep in that living room with that dog shitting and pissing itself.
The reason I brought that up, Goldie, because, you know, everybody sees you on TV or whatever. They see Lenny Lane, WCW, wrestling Rey Mysterio. You know, they go to, he goes to TNA, and then he's got to put up with shit like this working for a new company that should put him in a hotel in Nashville, but they don't.
That made a ton of promises, mind you, now. Yeah, you know this. Oh, we're going to give you the belts. Because when Jerry Jarrett first called me, he asked me to do the gay gimmick. And I said, listen, I don't think we can do this anymore. It's, I don't know. You know, and he goes.
Yeah, so when you said, because I was like, I'm actually freaking out. And I wanted to get your opinion on this in a second. Side note. So I'm watching the stuff that you're doing, and when I met you, it was 2002, which is almost 19 years ago now, 18 and a half years ago. So when Jerry called you, it was probably 2001 or, you know, that's almost 20 years ago. Like, he's calling you before TNA started, right? To be like,
right. They're getting it ready. I've been on tour with the AWA. Alan, did you go on to them tours in AWA?
To the WWE? Yeah, that's WWA.
Yeah, that guy's a mark. But anyways,
okay. But we're going back. Even you've had a rest from the gay gimmick.
I haven't had a rest.
But in 2001, you're saying, yes. I don't know if this is going to work. Are you saying that it's not going to work because you're just sick of it, or the people are sick of it, or for PC reasons?
PC reasons. Really? Yeah, I just thought, you know, we were entertaining, but at the same time, we're supposed to be heels, but people cheer us. So it's just like,
okay,
I don't know if it's going to work. And then, of course, Lodi was injured at the time, and he I don't know if he'd already contacted Alan or not, but he says, you know, Alan Funk from, I said, yeah, I know him. You know, he's a cool dude and stuff. He goes, you think you can do it with him? And I said, sure. Oh, we're going to give you the belts. You guys are going to be the champs.
The cruiserweight.
Blah, 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 blah.
Cruiserweight belts, right?
No, the tag team.
No, the tag team okay. In TNA.
Okay.
And so, you know, I was always taught at, Kurt Hennig was my mentor, as he was yours. And actually, the last time we seen each other, Goldie, was at his funeral. And he had always told me, believe none of what you hear and half of what you see in pro wrestling, which is very true. I never believed anything I heard.
He didn't teach me that, but he taught me a lot of really great things as far as psychology. And I wish he was around, but keep going.
Oh, you're not the only one. He was one of the good ones that died.
I know.
There's been some people that died that it's like, well, you know, it's not surprising. It's always sad because people leave by family members and stuff, but it's not surprising. That was hurtful. But anyways, so yeah, Alan, he just said that, you know, you and Funk are going to be partners and we're going to create a name for you. Who's going to be our consultant? Bert Prentice? I thought he said something about that. I'm like, I'd heard of Bert, never worked for him. But I was like, hey, you know, cool, just as long as the money's good and all that kind of stuff. But like Alan said, it soon got to be like, hey, you know, Lenny, we can't fly you them plane tickets from Minnie to Nashville. Bob Ryder would always tell me this. Yeah, them tickets from Nashville from Minnie to Nashville are too much. Can you fly to Atlanta? Sure, I can fly to Atlanta because I can drive with AJ. You know, Alan, you know, that was fine. So now I'm traveling 2.5 hours to Atlanta, the 3-hour drive to Nashville, back. There's a lot of traveling time in there. Then they wanted to cut my pay, and that's where I said, nah, this is where I exit. And that's kind of how
we did.
Yeah.
But hey, remember the very first show we did? It was in Alabama at that one arena.
Yeah, the Huntsville Auditorium.
They had a million people there. They had like Toby Keith. They had all these, you know.
Jasmine Sinclair was there.
All these racing guys. So they take me and Lenny. Do you remember we went in the media and they said, oh, man, we're putting the straps on. You guys are my top tag team. Bye, bye, bye. Remember we went and took pictures and did all that crap. Then we went to Nashville and this and that. So they're telling us this every time they see us. Oh, you're going to be my champs. You're my greatest tag team, whatever. And then the first night we work, what happens? I have nothing against these two, but Chris Harris and James Storm, they said, oh, you need to put these two kids over. They're gonna do a gimmick where they come out of their car. They're not even in their ring gear. They're going to you guys are going to put them over. You know, me and Lenny, we're professionals. We don't have a problem with that because they're going to put the straps on us. So we're just doing, you know, whatever. You know, we're working the program. So then we go to tag team tournament. I think I told you this last time, Goldie. You know, we beat Apollo and Buff Bagwell to advance. And then they put a team together that's not even a team. AJ Styles.
One guy was hurt, remember?
Who was that?
Jerry Lynn was partially hurt. It was AJ Styles and Jerry Lynn.
Yeah.
And Jerry Lynn was hurt.
And then they put him over.
You've got an established tag team who works together, taking two guys you just threw together.
Yeah, they just
and we lose. Nothing against Jerry Lynn, great worker. AJ Styles, I don't need
to say. Was Jerry really hurt? Like a shoot? A shoot?
Yeah, well, he was hurt. He might have had something wrong with them. I'm not totally sure, but they were working some angle where he was working hurt. So whether he was hurt or not, I can't remember. It was too far back. But
I think you know.
Does it? You know, that didn't make any sense. You know, yeah.
That's the type of shit you put up with in the wrestling business. Nothing makes sense. That's why.
Who are all the people that you said were saying, "Oh, we're gonna put the straps on you"? Blah blah.
Bert Prentice, you know, all the guys that were in the office.
Everybody. Bob Ryder, who was always secretly in the office. I let you know that. You know what's another? Goldie, you know this individual too. Do you remember Mortimer Plumtree, David Weber?
Yeah, don't talk shit about him because I adore him.
I love him. He was my manager when I broke into business. He'd been in the business a couple years before me.
I got to get David on here too. I didn't know that. I didn't know that.
Phenomenal.
I just thought he was like some guy because like, you know, we launch on Wednesday, this really badass Patreon channel. I didn't even know what Patreon was. And then Vince is like the second day of the COVID, he's like, "Yo, Goldie, you got to do this Patreon gimmick." And I was like, Patreon, what is it? You know, half the people think it's fans only or whatever, members only jacket. I get fans only and members only confused. And I'm like, what is it? He's like, Patreon, you know, it's like the membership based paid content. You know, that gimmick, bro. And I was like, well, I don't know what I would do. You know, and he's like, what are you talking about? You could give advice. You could rate dating profiles, all that gimmicks that you do on our show, blah, blah. And so I started to think about it. I started to develop. And then I've been reaching out and getting old content from TNA, right? So, like, I've got all these old tapes that I have to find all these gimmicks, like, hook them up to old computers to be able to suck the stuff out. And, like, sure enough, all of the, like, raw footage from the Huntsville, like, the raw stuff, not what you saw on the network, but, like, me with take one, take two. And I didn't do too many takes for an actress and an entertainer. I did okay. But, dude, I had no idea what was going on. I just remember the first one that I think they threw me to, like, out there was, like, for Mortimer, it was David and the Johnsons, the penis twins. And like David was really kind to me, but like, dude, I had never backstage interviewed. I'd never done interviews. I was good on the mic and articulate and everything from all my shit in Minneapolis and LA, but no idea. But David was really cool to me. And then Borash was kind of cool where he would just say, just go out there. You're going to be great. You know, like he was nice, but like, yeah. Weber was actually very concentrated on his craft and delivering promos, and I didn't know. So what did David Weber do before TNA?
He was in theater. I think he graduated from Mankato with a theater degree and just top notch. I mean, the dude could talk on the spot. But here's my point. TNA flies him down there and basically uses him. Now, let's not pretend we're all prostitutes. In one same word or not. And I said, as soon as you get old enough, there's a younger whore to take your spot.
Yeah.
Right?
Yep.
So moved him down here, promised him all this stuff. He had to sleep on Bob Ryder's couch the whole time, not making any money. They had him doing all this work. I mean, a ton of work.
Like, what do you mean? Behind the scenes stuff?
Oh, yeah. He was selling ads. He was promoting. I mean, he was the jack of all trades, master of none. You know, and basically just to let him go afterwards and said, see ya. And it was like, man, that's pretty shitty.
Why couldn't they have used him? Why there would have been room to use him.
Oh, yeah. I mean, definitely.
They just acted like they couldn't pay anybody.
Right.
When I look back at my pay scale, I think over the years inflated it. Like things were really great. But I actually was purging a bunch of stuff in the attic. And I came across some pay stubs, and I'm not saying that they didn't take care of me, but it wasn't anything what I remembered in my mind being. I'm like, wow, I flew out from LA every week for this. Like, you know what I mean? I guess at the time, speaking of exes and soon to be exes, I was with a really, Lenny, a really bad guy in Minneapolis, just like mentally, psychologically, verbally abusive.
That's when I moved you out. We moved you out of that townhome in Chanhassen.
No.
You don't remember that?
Holy shit.
You gave my friend your keyboard.
What the... Dude, I don't... Bro, that's... I don't...
Did you play gimmicks in the past or what? Yo,
dude, no, no. The gimmick was that guy. I don't remember anything when I left all that stuff. Like, and then I end up leaving the him in L.A., and fleeing here and like threw everything I had in a U-Haul. Dad flew in from MSP to LAX and we waited for the guy to leave for his gimmick and we threw everything in the U-Haul and got a Dodge. Like, I don't remember any of this stuff. Like, I blacked it all out. Holy shit, so you were at the townhouse in Chanhassen and by Prince's.
Yep, yep, yep.
And you helped me move out, and I gave your friend a keyboard.
Yeah, yeah, there was a keyboard there in your music room. You had that little gimmick music room.
If I gave him a keyboard, those keyboards were at least $2,000. So that was good pay then. And then I feel better.
Right, he appreciated it. I don't think it worked, but he liked it.
Oh, shit. Holy shit. I don't even remember this stuff. Oh, my God. All right, moving on. We're at TNA. Nobody's getting paid. David Weber goes, why did we bring up David Weber?
Just because we were showing how TNA was unorganized and not paying the guys and were decreasing pay, expecting you to work for less and less every time, asking people to take pay cuts when we already weren't making enough as it is. I could make more on an independent show than I was making at TNA and TV, for Pete's sakes.
Do you think, like, what do you think? You don't get jealous or mad when you look at, like, what it did in its heyday, do you? Or what do you attribute any success to? Just people throwing money, like Dixie throwing money at it? Or do you think they ever made a profit? Like,
I don't know. What do you think, Funk? What do you think?
Well, I mean, if it was just... I'm not really sure how the whole thing came about. I don't know if Jarrett's had any money behind him or if that was their own money.
It was for a while till Dixie came in.
I mean, I could see if that was their own money being tight like they were. I mean, that's just anybody. If it was your money going, you probably would have been doing the same thing, which I probably would have too.
But
once the money came in, the reason they stopped using me was because I got hurt in Finland by Sonny Siaki and I was in the hospital there for 3 weeks. I came back to TNA. They didn't want to use me anymore. They just said they weren't going to use me anymore. They thought I was a liability. And I was still wrestling in Japan and everything. So after Dixie got there, I have no idea what happened because they were throwing money around from what I heard after I left.
Yeah, no, for sure. And then it's hard for me. So the lawyer that I had was the same lawyer for the Jarretts. Like, she was our entertainment lawyer. And like, nobody knows this, but I don't know that they get this far in the podcast. So when I had the sexual harassment stuff happening, it wasn't from TNA's office. It was from office. Like, it was an outside party. And it was really bad. And I didn't want to tell her that what was happening because I knew she would sue the company. Like, because I had tapes of people saying really inappropriate stuff to me. I'd never reached out to these people. I'd never flirted with these people. I've never done anything. I didn't even know. I mean, I knew who they were because they were the purse strings. They would come backstage and they were writing out the checks after the shows. So it's a siren. So anyway, I didn't want to say anything because I knew that the lawyer would just put the kibosh on the entire promotion. Bringing that up, I knew from her, like, what people were getting paid, like what Ken Shamrock got for that first pay-per-view and what people were. And it was like,
I can imagine.
I mean,
let's throw some numbers out. I want to hear it, man. When I do pull-up podcasts, if I'm going to call somebody out, I'm going to call them out. You know,
I'll tell you off the air. It was a lot of money. And that's,
sure.
That's
well, you know, he's Ken Shamrock. I can believe that, you know, WWE guy.
Plus, you had a name in before.
Worth it. Definitely, yeah. Worth it.
But let's take a look at that. And I'm not saying Ken Shamrock. Let's take Ken Shamrock out of the scope of things because I just looked at some footage of like the first time I interviewed him and he called me a bitch and he spit on me. So I don't want to with Ken Shamrock. Let's just say Ken Shamrock is worth it. Let's take him out of the equation. Is it right to spend $5,000, $10,000, $15,000, $20,000, $25,000 on one person for a pay-per-view debut and then not pay the rest of the talent. With your experience in wrestling and as a businessman, because didn't you own that video store like years ago?
I owned a video store / porn salon. I owned a wrestling birthday parties gimmick. I've trained wrestlers. I'm a personal trainer. I've done it all.
Okay. So in your business opinion, Mr. Successful Entrepreneur, is that a good call to pay somebody that you have $100,000 to work with and you're going to spend a quarter of it or whatever on one person? Is that a good idea for ratings? And then you can't afford him every time afterwards. Is that a good call or not?
No, I don't believe it is, because if you want to build a successful wrestling company, since we're talking wrestling, you need to build a foundation just like any kind of house, right? You need to start at the foundation and build it up. And then, you know, you're going to need them guys, though, of course, that are recognizable and stuff like that. But here's another thing. If you get these guys here and you're paying them that money, film stuff for a month or 2 months or whatever you need to do to make it worth your –
Okay.
That's what – hey, Vince did it for years, right? You would go to tapings. There would be one live show, and you'd sit there for 3 hours or sometimes a Sunday, Saturday morning show, as Vince used to take back in the day when I was into wrestling, or, you know, watching it and stuff. You used to go when they came to your town, and he would film for like 5 hours for like 2 months, maybe 2.5 months full of stuff. So getting the most of your money, right?
I guess I never thought of that. That actually is really brilliant. Mm-hmm. Okay. So moving on. So now both of you are gone. Did you both exit TNA at the same time?
No. When Lenny left, they had me as individual. Remember, I got the Miss TNA crown from Kathy Dingman there.
I do remember that.
Taylor Vaughn. And then I did a couple more shows. And then, you know, I had a program with, like, me and Jarrett wrestled the Road Dog and one of them, Hermie Sadler, with that race guy or whatever. We did a couple things. And then that's when I got hurt in Helsinki, Finland by Siaki. And then they wouldn't use me after that.
And Lenny, when you left, did you still watch stuff or were you just done with it? Like, did you keep
it? I was kind of done with it a little bit, but I was having having conversations with New York, you know, possibly going there, you know, but the business is so political. You know what I mean? If anything, and what I'd like to say the most about the professional wrestling is Funk, myself, and Lodi, for all that matter. You know, we were victims of doing what was right, showing up in shape, working our butts off, asking questions, probably too many questions, you know, always wanting to find answers on how we could better ourselves.
Okay.
You never had to ask us if you call us, hey, you in shape? You know, we're thinking about bringing you in. You think you're ready? We were always ready. Didn't complain about doing jobs, but when it was your turn, you didn't expect that to happen to you, which I had firsthand account of that when the tables are flipped and you're starting to get put over, then all of a sudden there's issues because there's backstabbing and all the politics involved, you know? So we fell victims to that. If that should be a, you know, I don't even know how to say it.
Dude, that's spot on, man. Pretty much in wrestling, when you do what you're told, you work hard, you always look good, doesn't necessarily mean you're moving up anywhere. It has nothing to do with it.
And you watch in both products. When I would watch both products, I would look and, you know, if you've got a job, God bless you. But there was probably 75, maybe I'll go 50, maybe as high as 65% of them guys couldn't lace my boots and they had a job and I'm sitting at home. What's going on?
Yeah, that is discouraging.
So why do they get that push then?
Because they're friends. They do drugs with the right people.
Okay. All right. So you said it.
That's fair.
Yeah, they're friends with whoever they are. Everybody wants to get their friends a job, no matter how horrible, hurt, or how many bridges they've burned in the past. You know, they just keep getting their friends jobs. WCW should be a perfect example of this. How many years did, or how many weeks, what is it, 82 weeks, we crushed WWE, right? Crushed them. They couldn't, NFL football, nothing could touch WCW. Well, when you have the NWO going out there each and every night doing the same matches, disqualifications, not putting a younger talent over, and you flip the station over to Vince, and you don't know who's winning, the tide shifted, and that's the sinking ship right there.
Yeah.
Wow. I was watching an interview with some guy that was really getting on under my skin. I didn't like him, but he was I didn't like him. He fucking creeped me out. He was interviewing Francine, Extreme Francine, and it was interesting to hear her talking about how she really didn't do any any gimmicks her whole run at all. You know, like, I think somebody slipped her, like, a couple of something, like somas or something at some... She was like, whoa, this is too much for me. Like, why did you give me that much? And the chick just said, oh, I thought you could handle it. And she's like, handle what? Like, I don't take anything. Like, do you think that there was a disadvantage? Because I'm as clean as a whistle. I just always have. And even in the music business, I feel like sometimes, I don't know, I could have advanced more if I did use or if I did hang with that group, even though they're all dead now. So how advanced are you, really?
No.
I think that, like, was that a... Did that come as a disadvantage to you in this business? Because here's my point. I remember there was a couple of guys. I might remember wrong, but I thought it was CM Punk, Chris Daniels. Some of those guys, like after the pay-per-view, we'd go out to the ale house. Everybody would drink, do their thing. And then because we'd already checked out of our hotels to save money, like our flights was at like 5 a.m. So we'd have to leave the hotel at 3 anyway to get, you know, get there and get checked in. Everybody would just kind of hang out either at a strip club or doing their drugs or me at the pool laying on a lawn chair, you know, like pool chairs sleeping. And then like Daniel, CM Punk, and there's a couple other ones that they were at the gym after the ale house. But then CM Punk did okay. Christopher Daniels is still doing his thing. Like, do you think the drug thing deters or it can hinder or help? Or what's your opinion on that? Because I see both sides. I see some guys that didn't. They did their thing. They had their FaceTime, and then they left, and they weren't all coked out.
You want to answer that, Alan?
Yeah, go ahead, man.
It finally, the wrestling business and everything kind of turned towards that being accepted. It's way accepted now. You know, look at, you know, Christopher Daniels is a perfect example.
Okay.
That guy used to come in and do enhancement matches for WCW. Alan can probably say this. I used to see a lot of guys that come in and I would be blown. That would blow your mind with what they could do. Never seen before stuff. And you would say, why doesn't this person have a job? You know, but it's just for that reason. Everybody's scared of their spot. Don't want to work hard to keep their spot. They just want to, you know,
what's it? Dude, broke. Stop. What is up with, that's nothing back in that. That's like now, like in entertainment and in music with like these millennial kids. I swear to God, I'm going to shoot all over those motherfuckers. Like what do they even understand? Like what a privilege when they get like bands, in case you've heard, there's a few bands out there in the world. Like there's only 52 weekends in a year and you're not working all those weekends. And there's only how many venues within an 8-hour radius of your home. You are so freaking lucky. If you get a spot at all, like, are you promoting? Are you showing up? Like you said, when you guys showed up, you were ready to go. You didn't need to ask you if, are you guys in shape? Can you come in? Can we work you? Like, you're always ready. Like, where is this mentality in this culture of people in entertainment across the board that are always ready? Because it seems like they're always high and drunk.
Well, maybe not so much the young kids are high and drunk, but the young kids, they think they're automatically should be given this opportunity. Like, you know, like it's not surprising to them. They don't know the history. They don't know the guys that built this business and worked in carnivals. And, you know, you've interviewed a ton of them. I watched some of your stuff and you've heard the stories and Alan knows it too about the old timers. You get in the back with old, when I used to ride with Kurt, Rick Rude and Barry Darso, you know what I did? I zipped my lip because I was learning. You know what I mean?
Yes.
And just amazing. And you think, man, here I have this opportunity. Am I make? And, you know, we can go into money and I'll tell you about money in WCW because it wasn't all that great. I made a little bit towards the end, but, you know.
I think I told Gordy what I made last time. What I made was a joke in WCW.
Here's a funny story.
I want to hear the story. And then, Alan, what's a joke?
Well, I mean, come on, man. We're on the road all the time wrestling. Me and Sonny Siaki were making the same money. We were making $500 a week. And then they were paying us $500 a match. Well, then they redid our contracts because Lenny can tell you this. In wrestling, along with TNA, WCW, the contracts are bullshit. They every one of them have a clause in there. If they get rid of you, they only got to pay you for 90 days, and they can fire you any day they want to. So I'm wrestling. We're on the road. We're going to Nashville Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. We go to pay-per-views, you know, once a month on Sunday. Then we go to Nitro and Thunder. And then that when we had the Saturday night show, we went every other Wednesday. So I'm on the road some weeks, Tuesday or Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. I'm making less than $75,000 a year. I'm paying for my own hotels. I'm paying for my own rental cars. That's why all of us travel together, five, six, seven of sometimes more. We're in the same rental car piling people. We're in the same fucking hotel room getting, hey, can we get an extra bed rolled in here? So fucking
push the mattress off if somebody sleeps on the box spring.
Exactly. I mean, and that's
are you serious?
Oh, I loved it.
And the reason they got a kibosh on that, Paul Orndorff got word that on our contracts, we got paid $500 for every shot we did. So we were making $500 a match plus the $500 a week on our contract. So, I mean, we went up to Nashville Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. You know, we're making another $2,000 right there on top of our $500 a week. Paul caught wind of that. J.J. Dillon come in the power plant one day and said, hey, these guys are making this. Paul comes out there and goes, you guys are making $500 a week, and then you're making $500 a match. He put the kibosh on that. Then the one lady, Ingle or whatever the hell her name was in WCW. She redid the contracts. So we're young power plant guys trying to keep our job. We're going to pretty much sign whatever you want because we got no ground to fucking stand on. Mm-hmm. So then we signed a deal where then they – it was pretty much the same. I don't even know what she restructured. The only thing they changed was they quit sending us up to Nashville to work with Prentice and them guys on the weekends. So then, you know, then we're only making like $500 a week. And then after all that bullshit, then they start filming Thunder after Nitro. So we're only getting paid one spot and we're doing two damn matches. That's how they fucked you over there at that time. And that's how the business is in general.
And here's my
situation. I get brought in. I just coming in on Mondays. You know, they're paying me $500. You know, I'm loving it. You know, I'm nowhere near ready. I've been in the business 2 years. I spent three tours in Japan where I learned the most. And they bring me in. And I remember I go to a Saturday night taping right before Disney. Terry Taylor pulls me in the office and says, hey, we're going to sign you to a deal. I said, oh, yeah, you know, okay. You know, I'm kind of excited. What is it? You know, he goes, we're going to give you $500 a week. So I said, okay. I said, I'm not going to sign that. But, you know, if you want to pay me $500 a week, that's fine. He said, oh, you're only going to be working every other Tuesday for Saturday nights. That's it. So I thought, great. I'm going to still keep my stucco job where I was making $50,000 a year. And I'm going to do independence on the weekends. I'm going to be rolling in dough.
Okay.
Well, I worked 13 straight Mondays in a row, followed by Tuesdays. Kurt told me, you know, and I'm not complaining at this point because I'm still new. Kurt says, you need to quit.
I said, Kurt Hennig says this.
Yeah. I said, I'm not quitting. What? He goes, no, you need to quit. There's guys sitting at home. Nails is sitting at home. God bless him. A tough son of a bitch. Love you, Nails. Making $2.25 a year. He's not even being used. And I'm being used every week. So I said, so he goes, you need to quit. If you don't stand up for yourself, it's going to get worse. So I said, that's it. So I called J.J. Dillon. I said, yeah, I'm going to have to quit. Even though I didn't sign anything, I can just quit, right? So he goes, well, let me call you back. So he calls me back and he goes, we're going to give you $1,200 a week. So I said, you know, that's a little better. Okay. And then they keep me off TV the whole time. So I said something. I'm working all the time. Now they keep me off TV, but I was doing independence, what I wasn't supposed to be doing, but I did them anyways because I, you know, I loved independence. I loved working with my friends up there, like Plumtree and all them guys. I continued to do all that stuff.
And you're trying to make money.
Yeah. Then I get I create the whole gay gimmick.
You created that.
Yes. Put it together on a piece of paper, gave it to Jericho on his last house show night before he was going up to WWE. I said, hey, give this to Kevin Nash. Nobody said anything to me about it. Me and Lodi, which I first went to Johnny Swinger with this. I said, hey, you want to do this gimmick? He's like, oh, man, I don't want to do no gimmick. I said, all right. So I was trying to think, man, who do they pay money to? And then I remember Lodi. So I said, hey, you want to do this? He goes, hey, bro, if they do this story, I had it all laid out. If they do this storyline, I'll do it. So be it. They put us together. Now we're working. They put the strap on me. Who cares, right? But we're getting higher. You can go back, and I beg anybody to do this if they doubt me. You can go back to the Nielsen ratings at the time when I had the strap, and our segment outdid the NWO segment to the point where they could only calculate the 15 minutes, right? They could only give you 15-minute intervals to where Sting, Mysterio and I would be in the ring. Sting would run down. Hogan would run down. So now all of our stuff's glommed together, so they really can't tell the differentiate. You know how to differentiate who's really getting the ratings or not. And so then they brought Bill Bush in. Remember Bill Bush, Alan?
I don't know.
They brought him in first day in. I grabbed him. I said, hey, we need to have a talk. I told him about the Nielsen ratings. I told him, and he gave me a bump. I think I got bumped up to 150 grand a year. And then
what? That's okay.
150 grand a year. And then there was some things added on to it. Like if I worked a pay-per-view, it would be this and that. And
were your indies capped then at 150 a year? Like, were you not allowed to do any indies?
Yeah, but I still did. Because, you know, there wasn't the day of videos quite yet like there is now. I remember La Parca. I wrestled some kid who worked in a La Parca gimmick in Iowa. And J.J. Dillon somehow heard about it and grabbed La Parca. La Parca came to me all worried. He's like, Lenny, you need to tell them that wasn't me. You need to tell them it was me. I didn't know what he was talking about, you know. And so to be it, you know, J.J. Dillon said, hey, you wrestle. I said, that's somebody else using Lenny Lane. That wasn't me. You know, there was no videotapes back then, so there was no proof. But I would be confronted on numerous occasions about doing independence, but I would just lie about it.
Nice. Alan, when's the first time that you met Lenny?
I met Lenny, you know, passing by all the time in WCW. You know, we were always cool, you know, cordial, say hey, whatever. But, you know, we never hung out or anything when I first met him when I first got there. I was kind of the guy, you know, I was just trying to do what I was told. I was just laying low. I didn't, because in wrestling, it's so easy to get heat. And, you know, I was always hanging around like Mike Sanders and all the guys from the power plant. So, you know, I think Mike had a little better relationship with Lenny than I did at that time. And, you know, I remember Mike's always asking Lenny, be like, oh, yeah, eat some chocolate cake. I do remember this. Eat some chocolate cake, it'll bring out your abs, kid. So tell him like that.
Yeah, that was like
me. Hey, Lenny told me to eat chocolate cake, man. The sugar will, you know. I said, yeah, that's only if you're already lean, you dumbass.
Yeah, it helps if you've worked out at all and are somewhat dieting.
Yeah, because I used to do bodybuilding in Ohio. So I told him, I said, when you're lean and you have abs already, if you're going to eat a little bit of sugar or something, because that's the same thing Chuck Plumba do. He'd eat them little goldfish or whatever before the match.
Yeah.
He always said he got fuller and stuff, which, yeah, makes sense because you're getting sugar in your body. But Sanders is like, dude, I'm telling you, all you got to do is eat chocolate cake. You're already lean, you stupid ass. But Tom Bundy's not going to go eat a piece of chocolate cake and have abs.
Yeah.
You know?
What's the best rib that Kurt ever played on you, Lenny? And then Funk, while he's talking, I want you to think of what's the best rib somebody played on you.
Okay. So I'd started doing independence. This is right before I went to WCW, probably 96, end of 96. I bought a new Ford Escort, four door.
Yes.
It didn't have air.
He was balling.
It didn't have.
Didn't really need air in Minnesota, probably for like 2 days of the month, two months of the year. So I go to get it serviced, and I'm sitting at the service door, waiting to the door to come up and for me to drive in. All of a sudden, boom! Somebody hits my car from behind. I crack into the door and I look behind it, and there's Kurt in this SUV laughing his ass off. I'm like, dude, what the fuck? I mean, smashed in the back end of my car.
What?
Smashed in the front of the thing. And I was like, dude, you know, I get out hot. I'm ready to fight. I'm like, and then Kurt says, ha, 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 get in the truck. We'll go to lunch. Tell him to throw it on my tab. I'm like, dude, you just can't fucking run into people like that. You know what I mean? He didn't care. You know what I mean? So he crashed in my car, dented the back end, pushed me into the service door, and then just said, yeah, just put it on my tab. Let's go eat. And we went to lunch.
Did he fix your car?
Yeah, they fixed my car, and yeah, gave me I had a rental for a little bit.
Where was this?
At right off of 169 in that freeway Ford there dealership, Rockford Road, and
oh my god,
169.
Rockford Road and 169.
I think Nord was selling cars there at the time. John Nord.
No, Dude, that's so crazy that we're both from the same spot.
Yeah.
And Kurt was from Robbinsdale.
Yeah.
Yep. Wow. Mm-hmm. Best rib, Alan Funk. I'm going to respect you guys this time and go for a little bit more. I just love talking to you guys. You
know, when we were coming up, we were kind of afraid to do ribs really on anybody. So nobody really ever did ribs. The funniest thing I could think of, it both probably involved Mike Sanders. One night.
Chocolate Mike, cake.
What's that?
With his chocolate cake.
Yeah, so me and Mike were traveling one night, and I remember we had Chuck Palumbo, Siaki, all the, you know, Elix Skipper, a bunch of guys. Like I said, we always travel together. Well, on this particular occasion, me and Mike became friends with Ross Foreman, which you know Ross Foreman probably from TNA. Mm-hmm. He's good friends with Kevin. So Kevin Nash. So, you know, I got to know Kevin Nash through him, and Ross would always help me and Mike out because, we didn't make a lot of money, and we had to pay for our rooms and hotels, so sometimes he would give us his rent a car, or we would just meet up with him and he'd ride with him, and he'd let us stay in his room. Well, one night me and Mike were staying together, and he takes a shower, gets in bed. So, and then I take a shower, and we're sleeping in the same bed, you know. Not that we're gay, it's because we're trying to save money, and we only got one damn bed. So I remember we're laying in bed.
Because we're gay. Thanks, Alan.
You know, it's super dark, right? So... we're both laying in bed in our underwear, and then I roll over and try to spoon him. He's like, "What the fuck?" You know, and then I roll over, and then he takes his underwear off and tries to spoon me naked.
Oh my god!
Yeah. But me and Mike were good buddies, and my wife knew his wife, and we were always hanging out. But there was another rib Mike and I actually did to Kevin Nash. We're driving from Las Cruces, New Mexico, and we just went to the police department. We're at the police department all day long signing autographs. So me and Mike are in there. You know, we're young. We're trying to get people to know who we are. So we're signing 8x10s to all these cops and stuff. So when we leave Las Cruces, we're going to, like, Phoenix, Arizona or whatever, and they got a shuttle plane that all the WCW guys are riding on. So me and Mike said, fuck it, we'll just drive, because Kevin Nash told us it's faster to drive. So we had Ross's rental car. He was in Kevin's car with Che, one of the Nitro girls. So we're driving out of town, and I'm driving. So I pull up, and Mike's in the car, and I said, "Hey man, there's Kevin and Ross over there." So Kevin's driving, Che's in the front seat, and Ross in the back. So I grab Mike. I said, "Put your head in my lap like you're giving me a blowjob." So he's going up and down. My hand's going up and down on his head, and I pull up next to Kevin. You know, I'm driving. You know, and I look over at him. And then I went, ooh, and I grabbed Mike's head and pulled it up, and Kevin's looking. He's like, "What the fuck?" And then sirens go on behind us. The cops are following us. I didn't know it. And we're going like 85 miles an hour. And so the cop pulls us over. When he comes up to the car, he looks at me and Mike, and we always travel with 8x10s in the car in case we got pulled over. So we, the cops would see them, and then we'd be like, "Oh yeah, we're wrestlers," and they'd usually let you off. But that's happened to me, and coincidentally enough, I was with Kevin one night driving back from Virginia, and that happened to us. So Kevin's like, "Oh, I'll give you an 8x10," and he goes, "Alan, give him an 8x10. So then we get off, and we're even drinking Coors Light, open containers in the car, and the cop just looked the other way. So then the cop, when he pulled us over that time, he just said, "Shit, I know you guys. I got an 8x10 signed by you guys earlier at the police station." We're like, "Yes." So he's like, "Just be careful, and I'm going to let you go." So, you know, we got another speeding ticket. Yeah. Kevin, you know, at that time, we're just trying to stay cool with Kevin. So, you know, he thought he popped huge on that, you know. So we're like, "Oh, yeah, that's it."
Yeah.
Makes us tighter with Kevin.
Was that the same autograph signing that you were with Buff Bagwell?
No. No, hell no. That was at an indie show up in North Carolina.
Man, that promo that I did with you, I got heat from Vince because he was like, "You know, Buff's a good guy. He's a good friend of mine." I'm like, "Okay, like, whatever."
Oh,
like,
shit. Buff's an asshole.
He had heat. A story I remember one time with Abyss, Chris, and Chris Harris. They were driving to some indie show or something, and they just said these guys were following them. Like, they caught wind of, like, they saw these two guys, and they're just screwing with them. And so they were, like, you know, up on their ass driving, and then they'd slow down to, like, let them go around, and then they wouldn't go around, and so they'd start going up again, and then they were just, like, constantly, like, egging them on. And then finally, I guess they went around them, and then they started slowing down and, like, stopping, and you know what I'm saying, just totally messing with them. And so I don't know what the story, it was so long ago, but I guess finally Chris Harris and Abyss got, you know, on their way, and they needed fuel, and they pulled off to get some fuel, and then here comes this car, you know, and they totally like ready to like, so anyway, the car got out. They didn't start screwing with them right away, but I guess one of the drivers started to fuel up, and Harris said to Abyss, like, do you want me to, he's like, no, I got this. So anyway, just like imagine in the middle of the night, like 4 a.m, like Abyss getting out because he could barely fit in their little car. You know, it was like one of those little, it's like he's a freaking 7'4", whatever. He's a big guy. Like, no, he's not that tall, but he's pretty tall. Anyway, he gets out and like, I just remember those guys saying like, he gets out and like starts walking over to the guy feeling like, all Chris Harris said he saw in the rearview mirror was like, oh, shit.
Did he have his mask on?
He didn't have his mask on. He's just a big guy with that long baby oiled up hair. And so they said that they just got, like, the guy got in his car immediately and sped off with the gas pump still in the car and ripped the whole thing off of the gas pump. And, like, it was just bad, but, like, I mean, just the stories, like, there's so many ribs or just so many freaks out there. Like, all the indie shows that we've all done are just, like, they're so unsafe. And
oh, yeah.
And you don't know what, it's like I'm bleeding. I think I picked a bug bite. Excuse me. I'm like, what is this wetness on my leg? And it's not that. No, so there's just all these, like, crazy, crazy stories that people don't realize.
Back in the day, I could tell you, I've heard some crazy stories, whether they're true or not, about the Steiner brothers and some of the ribs they used to do to some of the guys. I don't know if Lenny's ever heard any of those, but
I want
to
hear one.
I've heard some crazy shit.
All right, let you guys go. I want to hear one.
Have you ever heard the story, Lenny, where the Steiners hung the trainer? I can't remember his name.
Yeah, they duct taped him up.
Yeah, and they hung him from somewhere. What? They hung him by his feet. They stuck a Sharpie in his ass, from what I hear.
Yeah.
And they wrote on him, a sign on him, said, if anybody takes him down, they're going to get twice as bad. So the guy was hanging there, and everybody was afraid to take him down because they thought they were going to get freaking, you know, beat up by the Steiners. So nobody took him down. And then I guess some office lady come over there and found him, let him down finally.
That's mean, though. That's not even, I don't even call that a rib.
Shit, like, I mean, you know. You heard that story, Lenny?
Yeah, oh, yeah, I definitely, yeah.
Yeah, I've heard a few stories like that, whether they're true or not, I don't know. But I remember Rick Steiner coming to the locker room when I first got there. We were in, I think we were somewhere in Arkansas or somewhere. So we're in the locker room, and Kevin, or Goldberg's in there, Hugh Morris, Billy Kidman, a few other guys. I think Lance Storm might have been in there. I can't remember. But so Steiner comes in there and starts fucking with me. He gets in my face, and he's pushing me like he wants to beat me up, you know, like he's real hot at me. And so I was like, I'm looking around going, shit, he might whoop my ass, but I ain't backing down. So I kept fucking like bowing up to him. And I'm like, I said, yeah, fuck you, motherfucker, you know. And then he fucking grabbed my shirt. He ripped my shirt right off me. It was a pink shirt that the lady that did the gimmicks, the gear, made. And so I was just taunting him. I'm like, fuck it, he's going to whoop my ass, fuck it. And because Goldberg and Hugh Morris, all those guys were like, oh, my God, what the fuck is he going to do to this guy? So, you know, and I've heard the stories already about Steiners, and I don't really know Rick at all, and which I'm friends with him now. Actually, because of this situation, he became friends with me. So I wasn't backing down from him, so I don't think he really knew what to do, because usually, I guess, guys would back down from him. So when he ripped my shirt, I was like, oh, you're real tough guy. I said, you ripped my pink shirt. I was like, oh, that's real tough. And then he kind of was like, fuck, I can't believe that kid said that to me. Like, what the fuck am I going to do now? Like, I think he really didn't know what to do after that, because he didn't scare me. I mean, I'm not saying he didn't scare me, but I wasn't showing.
That's still mean, though. That's like pooping in China's bag mean and stuff.
Yeah, but I mean, you know what? Some of those guys think that shit's funny and stuff for whatever reason, but I mean, smoking. You know.
Kurt Hennig, I remember I had to change clothes like 4 or 5 times during the pay-per-view for different interviews. That was in my contract, like different look each time. So I was always running really quick, and then they were changing the copy, and I had no idea what I was talking about anyway. But I remember going up to the TNA asylum, and you know, we all had our little folding metal chairs up there, and like all of my luggage, which was over to the side, was now all chained and duct taped closed to chairs.
So you couldn't get in it.
Kurt Hennig was just like, he struck again. But I mean, I was, yeah. I mean, how are you gonna get chains off of stuff? Like, so needless to say, I wore the same outfit over and over, but like I never did get my suitcase really. We had to rip it and cut it. And,
Lenny, I think Lenny told me this story too. I think, remember we were driving, you told me a story about Kurt when they were underneath the ring for Nitro the whole time and they had to wait to the end segment. Did you tell me that story?
No, that wasn't me.
Oh, yeah, I thought it was you.
Kurt was farting the whole time?
No, he shit in a bucket.
So yeah.
Nice.
They had a 3-hour Nitro, right, Gordy? So the NWO had to come out at the end. So they had to stay under the ring the whole fucking show. And I guess Kurt was like, oh, I got to shit so bad. And then finally he shit in a bucket and everybody was under there going, what the fuck? They couldn't stand it. People at the ringside were like, fuck, what the fuck? Somebody shit themselves. So everybody around ringside and like, what the hell was the security guy's name?
Oh, gosh.
You know, the old guy?
The fat guy
was always mean.
People who I don't like.
They were standing around the ring going, what the fuck? Somebody shit somewhere. And finally, when they come out, everybody was fucking running out of the ring because it smelled so bad.
Right.
Could you imagine?
If you knew anything about ribs and if you ever heard about the Dynamite Kid.
Yeah, I have.
Worst ribbers in the world, right? So my first trip to Japan, he was there. And it was actually his last match. And, you know, and I'd heard all this stuff about him, right? And I was like, oh, look, this guy's nuts, you know? And just like a lot of pro wrestlers are, thank God they're for pro wrestling or the jails would be overpopulated, right? So I come going, you know, I walked around the block a couple times. I'm new there. I go to walk in the hotel. He comes out as I'm walking in. He goes, let's go eat. Because he obviously knows if I'm there, I'm wrestling, blah, 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 blah. Yeah. This was 96. And so the whole time I'm like, oh, dude, I've heard a lot. And so we sat down and he told me all the ribs he did, which were horrible. Horrible. I don't even want to repeat them. But then that's, you know, the day we left, he ended up having somewhat of a stroke and was in the, what do they call the places in the airports for the hospital? Wherever you go. Yeah. So I went in there, I brought him a yogurt, said bye to him, and that's the last time I seen him. And he was wheelchair bound from there ever since.
Oh,
and just, you know, I used to love the British Bulldogs, the Dynamite Kid, obviously. But he had 2 pair of Zubas on underneath his Bulldogs trunks when he wrestled. He wrestled Siama. They tried to redo their old stuff, which, you know, Dynamite Kid had a fake hip, fake shoulder. Had a drop foot. It was the saddest thing you ever seen in your life, seeing this guy you used to idolize in real life. First time I ever seen him. Well, no, I went to a show one time. I got backstage when I was a kid and saw him, so impressed. But now I'm seeing this guy, and he's got Zubas on underneath his actual tights, and they're still falling off him.
God dang.
Yeah, sad, man.
He's pretty bitter now from what I hear, too.
Yeah, but lived hard. There's a guy who lived a hard life, so really you can't be too surprised.
Yeah.
People don't know what, and then I'll let you guys go. And just like, we have a couple minutes left. I don't want to keep you all day. I absolutely so appreciate talking to you, Lenny. And it's so good to see you. And Alan was just in our video that's doing really, really well. Alan, what?
All for you.
Dude, I mean, did you just make that Chase keeps making comments? Chase Stevens keeps making comments about, well, if you look hard enough, you'll be able to see me.
Honestly, that was the first time that I didn't remember chasing TNA when we were there. Do you remember him, Lenny? He looked like a little 14-year-old boy when he first started.
He did. You guys,
I couldn't recognize him.
I remember him, but I never really
saw it though. You all the whole. So real quick, you guys, that and Alan, you don't know this. Like, so to pitch that video, which is almost 10 minutes long, everybody told me no. One of the label guys that was pitching and repping it and trying to get it placed for a premiere, he told me that I should strongly consider taking out all of the wrestling and the fight scene because it didn't make any sense. And I was like, it makes perfect sense to anybody that believes in Jesus Christ and like gets it. Like, you idiot. He's like, well, it's just very confusing. I'm like, it's not confusing at all. Like,
yeah, I don't think that was confusing at all.
It's not confusing at all. It's freaking beautiful. The ending is just so Paul, and he's like, well, some people are getting offended by the, and I'm like, yeah, okay, so no, so I'm not.
Well, I mean, that's the modern day portrayal of Christ.
It was insane. So he told me no, and he's like, okay, and he could tell I'm like, you don't need to pussyfoot around. Like, what's the next point? He's like, well, it is almost a 10-minute long video. Have you considered shortening it? No, and I'm not going to shorten it. And then he said, there was all of this stuff that, well, this guy said that he would play it on like his Planet Fitness monitors if you did X, Y, and Z. And I'm like, okay, well, then we won't be playing it on Planet Fitness monitors. Is there anything else that you have to say? And he was like, well, I'm like, well, it sounds like you don't want to do anything with it at all. So let's just agree to not agree. And I'm going to hang up the phone now and not waste any more of your or my time. And anyway, then the next person that I hired and paid money to get it placed, I just was like, do you have a premiere yet? Like, what are we doing? What can, you know? And she's like, well, they're just very offended by, you know, I'm like, okay, great. So don't send it to Christian outlets. Send it to mainstream. Like, it's not meant to, Christians aren't going to even probably get it. They're so bent out of shape about everything. I'm like, send it to mainstream. Well, no one, in my professional opinion, is going to ever pick this up. And I'm like, Lenny Lane. So I'm on Instagram and some guy reaches out to me and he's like, oh, I've been following you. And I just wanted to like, let you know, like I've got this, you know, magazine, blah, blah, hip hop magazine. And we had talked before and I kind of knew who he was. Dude, St. Louis Park. I don't even know what year it was, 19, whatever. Like, I think I was 16, 15, 16. I did a DARE presentation in St. Louis Park. This kid was the only Persian kid in the school. He said he fell in love with me and my single on KDWB. He's been following on and off ever since, blah, 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 big supporter. And so this guy's like, well, I can't do anything with my hip hop magazine, but I happen to be like the editor and I own the new revision of the Los Angeles Tribune. Do you want to premiere your video and the story in that magazine? I'm like, yeah, I think so. It's just like, it's so funny. Like, here's this guy from St. Louis Park, Minneapolis, Minnesota, close to Minneapolis. And then Alan, they're telling me like all of your stuff was too much and the whole thing was over the top. And like, it starts out, what did they say? It starts out with a woman slitting her wrist. It's very disturbing. I'm like, yeah, by design. It's supposed
You're telling
to
be, a story.
It's supposed to be freaking disturbing. So it got placed, but like Lenny, we got to send you that video because Alan just totally.
Yeah, you got to take that video out, Lenny. What it's doing is it's kind of a PR video of like suicide
prevention. Yeah.
Send me the link.
But dude, Alan just totally crushed it. So, and I know you're not doing a lot of stuff in the business anymore, Mr. Funk, but you're definitely rocking and rolling it. And we've talked. Well,
I'll say this, Goldie. I have stuff in the works right now.
Oh, you do?
Yeah.
Should we say we have stuff?
We have stuff.
Oh, wait a second. Yeah. What?
But we really can't talk
okay,
about
okay, all right. Oh, my heart.
But you'll be the first to know, Goldie, when something happens.
No, you better come on and talk about that. And well, I better be invited to whatever you're doing, dude. That.
But I do want to say one thing. If Chase Stevens watches any of your shows, like he, I don't know what it was about this kid when I met him that night at Rod's house when we did that video. I wish I would have knew Chase Stevens back in the day, man. Because, you know, you hear stuff. People said he was like a little smug kid and stuff. And I love the kid. Just the night I met him and hung out with him, man, he was one of the coolest guys in the business I've ever met. So
I'll definitely tell him that you put him over and maybe even put that in the clip. He's always been really cool to me. I wish my head wouldn't have been so far up my ass in places it shouldn't have been. With TNA, like it's not my biggest regret in life. I just wish I could go back in time and redo things. And I was even talking to like Jerry Lynn the other day and I was like, dude, if there's ever a spot for like the meanest heel that you've ever seen in your life, like just call me. It's not even about the money. I just wish I could redo. Like I watched some of the promos that I did in TNA when I started to do the split personality and like freak out and go nuts. And I was like, holy shit. Like, and I'm not trying to like put myself over, but I'm going to put myself over.
I was good.
As Barbara Wawa says, you know, they're like, you're going to put yourself over on your own interview, Barbara Walters. She's like, if I don't, nobody else will. No, but it was good. And I wish I could go back in time and be better than I was and work with people wanted me there because I felt like some people didn't. Alex Shelley, he was just not, he didn't want me there. He didn't want to work with me. I'm like, I would just love to have meetings and actually be present at the meetings. Cause like, I tell this story all the time, like Mike Tenay, I know that guy freaking hated my guts and with reason. I was a prick. I was an arrogant little bitch that was in Beverly Hills. Now Lenny thought that I knew everything. I'm like, what is this? This is so stupid. Just, and it was, oh my God, I wish I could just do it over with what I know now and do a better job. Cause I'm pissed at myself, but
that's right. You live and learn.
I mean, we
all got regrets.
I cannot wait to hear what's going on when you're allowed to talk about that. Cause holy shit, man, that's just good stuff.
See, that's part of being ready. Like Lenny said earlier, you know, if we do get an opportunity, it's because we're ready. You know, if they called me today, wanted me to work a show tonight, I'm probably.
Don't you love that though? And there's an evangelist that I love. His name's Joel Osteen. You either love him or hate him, but I've gotten a lot of good nuggets from that guy. And I remember him talking about a story with him and his dad before his dad died, being on a plane. They were sitting, I think, in first class, and they sat next to this older gentleman who was 85 years old. And this 85-year-old man proceeded to tell him and his son or his dad that his 10-year plan about all of these dives that he was going to do. And all it was Jacques Cousteau.
He's 85,
and he's got his 10-year plan of television and all this stuff laid out. Like, he was ready. You know what I'm saying? Like, there is something about being ready, and what are you doing every day? And, like, you guys are both my friends, super positive thinkers, just, like, visionaries, on track, focused. You look, both of you just look freaking sick. I mean, it's just disgusting. Like, you look ready. You're ready to go, and that's how opportunities happen for people. And these kids that we were talking about that just expect everything because you're existing or breathing, it doesn't work that way. Like, what are you doing to solidify your spot in whatever business that you're doing? Before we go, and since you can't talk about what you're doing, I just want to end on the best rat story that you have. What's the best rat story?
Go ahead first, Lenny.
Well, I got to think a minute because I got a lot of rat stories.
I mean, you know, I got a lot of good rat stories that
I used to always get heat because at least I took them out to eat. Yeah, I'm a nice guy, man. Anyway. Oh, shit.
See, I don't have any good rat stories because I never cheated on my wife, so my ex-wife. So
oh, there you go.
But I do have one that followed me in my hotel room one night, me and Ross Foreman. We were in.
Wait, you have one that followed you to your hotel room? Like, you're talking about it like it is a legitimate rat.
Oh, they are legitimate rats. Any woman that's dressed up in a damn evening gown gets in the elevator with you and follows you to your room and knows that she's coming into your room no matter what is a fucking rat. Who I mean, what kind of woman would follow to your room and want to have sex with you that's not a rat? So this chick follows me to the room, literally. Like, they get in the elevator, and her and this other girl is dressed in, like, evening gowns, like they're going to prom. The girl's getting in the elevator with us. They go up to the floor with us because I ask them what floor they're on. I hit my button. They're like, yeah, that's where we're going. So they get out of the elevator. They're following me down the room. We get to the door, and me and Ross are about to go in, and they're standing there. And I was like, hey, ladies, you know, what are you guys doing? They're like, oh, well, we're going to come in your room. And I'm like, I hold my finger up, and I show them my wedding ring. I said, well, I'm married. You're not coming to my room. And they're like, oh, yeah, we're coming in. You know, we'll have a good time, blah, blah, blah. And Ross was kind of looking at me. And, you know, Ross used to stay at my house during the week when he was down in Rome with me and my ex-wife. That's how good of friends we were. And so, I mean, Ross knows I don't cheat on my wife. He knows these chicks ain't coming in. So I had this hat that I met this guy, Brandon, in Baltimore. He owned the Big Daddy, like, clothing company. I don't know if you ever heard of that brand. Like, you know, if you can't run with a big dog, stay on the porch, whatever. He had this company. So he used to send me boxes with these hats in them, like fluorescent green and orange, and everybody liked the hat. So I used to have them with me, and I'd hand them out to people. And I actually had probably a couple with me at that night. And because I give, you know, I used to give some of the boys. And after five or six tries of coming in the room, I told her, no, you're not coming in the room. So she's like, well, my boyfriend would love your hat. And I was like, you got a boyfriend? You're trying to come in the room. And I'm like, I don't give a shit if your boyfriend likes my hat or not. She's like, well, I'll give you $100 for your hat. And I said, I look at Russ and I said, are you fucking kidding me? She pulls out a $100 bill and says, here, I'll take your hat for $100. I was like, what the fuck? So I took the $100 bill and I give her, I said, here's my damn hat. And she's like, ooh. So I walked in the room, shut the door, and they were still standing there. So I looked at Ross. I said, damn, dude, we're eating fucking room service on the ladies, you know? So
on the ladies.
And we ordered steaks that night in the room and didn't have to pay for the shit. I got $100 for a hat that I didn't pay a cent for.
Great story.
So when we taped for WCW Saturday morning and Sunday morning power shows, I think they were called, we would go to Disney and film 10 days straight, stay at the hotels. And it was great, you know, coming from Mini, you know, where it's freezing. Now we're getting tans and stuff. And there was always girls around. Well, this girl, short hair, really cute girl, you know, whatever. So she wants to hang out with me the whole time. This is like the second day, you know, and, you know.
But you're not married or you don't have a girlfriend, right?
No. So, you know, whatever, we do our thing. And then she comes the next day and I can't kick this girl. So I say, hey, listen, really, I like girls with longer hair. You know, you're really nice and everything, but I really prefer girls with really long hair.
Oh, my God. You right? Asshole.
Well, she goes out and gets extensions.
No.
And shows up at the pool at the Days Inn with the extensions on.
Holy shit.
And I'm like going, what? And I used to travel with Ric Fuller all the time, right?
Yeah.
So anyway, she comes back to the room, whatever. She goes to the bathroom, and then she leaves. And I go up to go to the bathroom, and walk in the bathroom, and there's like this turd, little tiny turd, with all this hair around it, and the thing won't flush. And I'm hot now. I'm like, this chick come and took a shit in our toilet. She couldn't wait till she got home. And it's got like a hair. I mean, this thing looked like a monster, like a turd face with hair on it. It was just all around it, and the thing wouldn't flush. It was the funniest thing, and we laughed about it the whole time.
All right. On that note, the top of the hour, I've kept our guests overtime. Goldie's Closet, episode 70. 70 episodes since Vince Russo's Bucketful of Chicken Necks, which we did for 2 years. I want to thank our guests. Do I just call you Lenny Lane? Is that, that's what I can say? I mean, yeah. It's on Wiki, but we'll just Lenny Lane and Mr. Alan Funk, who you've heard it here, kind of, that there is some exciting things in the works, which I just personally can't wait to hear about, just because I'm a big supporter of both of them. They're both actually great human beings that aren't douchebags or pieces of shit.
Hey, going to tell the people real quick, how did we treat you in TNA?
You?
When we met you in TNA.
You treated me insanely amazing. I
gave you workout tips the very first show we were at.
You know what? And I'm gonna say something, and then we're gonna go off the air, and then I'm gonna really shoot because I can't shoot on air what I have to say. But everybody in TNA treated me really, really well. Even the office treated me well. As far as like nobody ever did anything funky to me at all. Jerry Lynn even called me the other day to apologize for a promo that we did. I'm like, what the? Ooh. I said, please shut the up and just sit down. And I said, he's like, Goldie, if I offended you in any way, I'm like, okay, you're not gonna like what I have to hear, bro, but I want you to hear this. And he was like, yes, ma'am. He was super quiet. And I was like, number one, I sign on TNA as a grown ass an adult. I am a grown ass woman in entertainment. Number two, I sign on to entertainment, which I've been in since I was 3 years old, starting out in Minneapolis, Minnesota. Number three, I sign on as a grown-ass adult to entertainment, like to wrestling. Like, I knew exactly what I was signing up for, and it was nothing that he did. Like, oh, I'm just going to say all this inappropriate shit to piss Goldie off. It was part of the script. I signed up for pro wrestling. Like, what the – like, have an idea of what you're signing up for and then act accordingly, and I'll just leave it at that. We're going to shoot for 2 seconds after this, but I want to thank my guests, our guests, Realm Network, everyone at the Realm Network, and Vinso's brand family, Russo's brand, everything, everybody that's a brand fam member. Thank you for watching. Thank you for listening. We make everybody clap. Come on, golf clap. Clap, Lenny. Thanks, everybody.
Everybody, it's your girl Goldilocks, and we are inside Goldie's Closet. I want to ask a favor of you all, whether you watch the show or not. Come to our band shows, what have you. It's something that you can do to support, and it costs nothing and no time at all. If you shop on a very popular online website, I would really appreciate it if you would bookmark some of the items that you are shopping for. And if you could just simply do this. Go to goldienose.blogspot.com. If you go over to the right, all the way to the bottom, the About Me section, there's a link. It just says I'm an Amazon affiliate. If you click on that, it takes you inside my umbrella, and everything that you order, I can earn just some help and support to keep all of this going, to keep the band going. We've got a hefty vehicle repair. It's pretty substantial. So it would be really great if you could remember my link. We get some support. It's that simple. I love you all. Thank you for making the time to stop by and check out everything that we're doing. Mwah.